left off last week, we were discussing the two different types of Rov, Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Leisa Kaman. So Ruba de Issa Kaman, just to review for a moment, Ruba de Issa Kaman is when I count up all the pieces of information, I have the classic 10 stores, 9 of them are selling kosher, 1 selling treif, I know exactly what's kosher, what's treif, I find a piece of meat on the floor, so that's a Ruba de Issa Kaman. Ruba de Leisa Kaman means I can't really count up the information, it's just that I know the information is true. I know that most animals don't have holes in their lungs. Nobody actually did the research. I know that most women give birth at 9 months instead of 7 months. We never have actually counted up all the births in the world, but we know nature dictates to us that this is in fact the case. So the Gemara ultimately concludes that both Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Leisa Kaman are effective. Ruba de Issa Kaman is derived from a pasuk. Ruba de Leisa Kaman may be a pasuk, may be a halacha from Sinai. It's unclear. But one thing that's clear from the end of the Gemara is that they both exist. Whether they work in the same way, that we spent a lot of time last week, the Shem Shmeitz and others, about whether fundamentally they're the same or fundamentally they're different, in terms of being a birur, in terms of being a dinan hoga, those are the details, but in terms of the existence of these two rovs, so it seems pretty clear from the Gemara that they in fact do work. However, we have to take a step back and question, is that really true? Is it really muskum, is it really agreed upon by everybody that both of these rovs actually exist? Is there really such a thing called the Ruba de Issa Kaman? Is there really such a thing called the Ruba de Leisa Kaman? So there is a machlekes hatanoim that appears in several places in Shas. The primary place is Maseches Yevamos. It's hard to get away from Yevamos these days. But the sugya starts in Yevamos and permeates other areas in Shas. The machlekes of Remeir and the Chachamim revolves around the following shaila. There is a din that we just read in yesterday's parsha. Vim lo yachpot ha'ish l'kachas ha'zivimto. There's a halacha that chalitza must be done by someone who's over the age of bar mitzvah. Torah says ha'ish, so ish comes to mind, zakotam. So a child under bar mitzvah cannot do chalitza. It doesn't mean that the woman is not zakuka. Let's say you have a very, very tragic situation, a husband dies, and the only brother around is a year old, so then the woman's really stuck because she can't do chalitza until he turns bar mitzvah. But she can't marry anybody else anyway, so she's still zakuka li'ivam. She's still stuck, she's still connected to this yavam, even though she would have to wait a long time to do the chalitza. That's the din, that's the halacha that a chalitza's katan is not acceptable. Then there's the machlekes satanoim. What about a chalitza's katana? Because it doesn't say Isha in the pasuk. So one Tana says, Katana can't do chalitza. The other Tana says, no, that just as a boy can't do chalitza under bar mitzvah, so too a girl can't do under bar mitzvah. So that's a din. And in terms of chalitza, katan for sure is no good, a katana may not be good as well. What about concerning yibum? What if the boy under the age of bar mitzvah, the girl under the age of bas mitzvah, would want to do yibum? So here the Mishnah says, and that's okay, it doesn't say ish in terms of doing yibum. So how old would a child have to be in order to do yibum? So then the Mishnah says we fall back on the regular halacha Moshe Sinai that tells that until the age of 9 years old, so the ma'aseh bi of a boy is nothing. It doesn't matter in any areas of halacha. Or until the age of 3, a ma'aseh bi of a girl is meaningless. But once the boy is over the age of 9, the girl is over the age of 3, so technically speaking, they can do yibum together. Whether it's a good idea, a bad idea, it's a different story. But technically speaking, a yibum could take place. If you had a little girl who was married off, let's say by her father, so she's 5 years old, and now her husband dies, and she falls for yibum. So she falls for yibum to the brother who's 10 years old. So that's the din, that they're technically speaking allowed to do yibum together. So the Mishnah uses the phrase that if a yavama falls for a katan, so let's say she's over bas mitzvah, and he's under bar mitzvah, he's 9, and she's 20. So the Mishnah says, take out Leno, so she should raise him, so we'll get married, and she'll take care of him. So she's 10 years older than whatever it is. So that's the din, that if he's over 9, she's over 3, so technically speaking, they can do yibum. Comes Rabbi Meir and says, no. Rabbi Meir says that we cannot allow this. We cannot allow a child under the age of bar mitzvah to do yibum, or a girl under the age of bas mitzvah to do yibum. Why? Because you're running into a potential risk. What's the potential risk? The din is that yibum only applies to somebody who is at least physically able to have children in the following sense. A person can't have children for a lot of reasons, but let's say you have somebody who's what's called a sris, or someone who's called an eilis. Sris means that the man never matured properly. His whole body anatomically is just different, that he's never really going to develop the normal siman, the normal physical characteristics of a male. or an islandess for a woman is a similar aloha, that her whole body hasn't developed properly. That she, it's not that she has some kind of a hormonal issue or something that's preventing her from becoming pregnant. She doesn't have the kalim. She doesn't have the whole body isn't functioning properly. She doesn't have the proper anatomy ever to become pregnant. So the Mishnah says that either of the man is a sris or the woman is an islandess, so the whole mitzvah of yibum doesn't apply. Not only does yibum not apply, chalitza doesn't apply either. There's no zika. Zika meaning the relationship between the yavam and the yavama that requires of the yavama to do chalitza or yibum. That whole relationship doesn't exist because the Torah says v'haya b'chor shetele yachum shemachim v'meis. The Gemara says it has to be a shetele. It has to be a woman who could at least theoretically have the possibility of having a child. Let's say the woman is already 75 years old. There's still zika because there's nothing wrong with her. I mean, she's past the age of childbirth, but that's not considered to be an illness. An illness is only if there's something which is physically so wrong that would prevent her whole body from developing properly like a female. So the woman is an illness, there's no yibam, there's no chalitza. Well, the man, if the yavam is a sris, there's no yibam or no chalitza. Because the Torah says, below yimoche shmo Yisrael, pratlazeh the shishmo mochoi. That the whole purpose of yibum is to be making shame. So if the person who's supposed to be making shame is not a bar hochi to be making shame, not that he's 95 years old, it means there's something wrong with him physically, he's a sris, he can never ever be making shame, he can never have a child. So the possible by yimoche shmo Yisrael is never going to be fulfilled anyway. So the whole din of yibum chalitza doesn't apply. The Mishnah says that the din of lo yimoche shmo Yisrael applies both for the person who died, as well as for the yavam in the following sense. Let's say if the brother who was married was a sris. So that's also this person was never even in the ballpark of having children, so then the mitzvah yibum or chalitza doesn't apply. There's a famous story about there was a certain person who was ranking out a certain nun from very famous nun from Israeli politician or something. So the person was some kanoi was saying, that guy, such a Russia Marusha, that guy, that whatever, that official, such a Russia Marusha, says Yemach Shemai. So the way the story goes, there are different versions of who the Rav was. Either the Rav was Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld or others who heard this conversation, and they stopped him and said, wait a second, listen to what you just said. You just said about this Jewish person, Yemach Shemai. Let me ask you shyly, he said, let's say that this person who you just called the Russian Marusha Machshimo, if he would die without any children, would you paskin that his wife needs chalitza? His wife doesn't need chalitza. So the guy says, of course his wife needs chalitza. He's Jewish. So the Torah says, "V'lo yimach shemo Yisrael," and you said yimach shemo. He said, "You're going against the pasuk chumash." He said, "Yimach shemo is a term that we only use for goyim. I mean, not for goyim or rishayim will come to kill us. Then you say yimach shemo. But for a Jew, no matter how bad he is, you don't say yimach shemo because the Torah says lo yimach shemo Yisrael." Anyway, get back to the story. So that was what I was going to talk about today. So the Torah says that Yibum Chalitza only takes place when there's an ability to make him shame. So therefore, if the Yavam, the person who's doing the Yibum, is not a Barachi, he's a Sris, then there's no Yibum, there's no Chalitza. Whenever there's no Yibum and Chalitza, if the couple goes ahead and gets married, let's say the Yavam or the Yavam, for whatever technical reason, there's no Yibum and Chalitza, so then they're not allowed to get married. If they get married, they're in violation of Eish HaZach, like we spoke about yesterday in the Drasha. Whenever it's Shalom B'mach Mitzvah, so it's an Isidir Aisa of Gili Arayis. So what would the din be if you have the Yavam is either a Sris, or the woman, the Yavam is an islandess, and they went ahead and do Yibam anyway. The Mishnah says they don't have to do Yibam. They went ahead and do Yibam. So then the Chayav Koris, because they violated Eish HaZach, they married the brother's wife, Shalom B'mach Mitzvah. So that's what Rabbi Meir is bothered. Rabbi Meir says, if we're going to have a little kid, he's 9 years old, a little girl, she's 5 years old, so they're going to go ahead and do Yibam. So says Rabbi Meir, how do you know this kid is not going to be a Sris one day? How do you know this girl is not going to be an islandess one day? The only way we know that normal people are not Sris and islandess, we see. The man looks like a normal man, he's developing properly. The woman looks like a normal woman, she's developing properly. Even though they don't have any children yet, you can tell, the Gemara gives you simanim and maseches yevamos, you can tell by the way the woman's body looks, by the man's body looks, the way different simanim, different physical characteristics, which are indicative that the person is not a Sris or not an islandess. So Rabbi Meir says that those characteristics only begin to kick in around puberty time. So you have this 9-year-old kid, he may be a Sris. This 3-year-old girl, she may be an islandess, you have no idea. You're going to let Yibum take place. There's a chance, there's a 100 chance, you may be playing with fire. You may end up being matur, an iser of Eish HaZach, Shalom B'mokam Yibum. So therefore, Rabbi Meir says, HaKotah lo yeyabem, HaKotah lo tetsyabem, Achi yigdolu. Why? Because Shema Yimsa Kotan Sris, Shema Timsa HaKotah islandess. That's Rabbi Meir's chashash. And the Rabbanan responded to Rabbi Meir, what kind of chashash is that? What are the odds that this person is going to become a Swiss? What are the odds this person is going to become an analyst? It's not 1 in 100. It's so unlikely. The rove is most people are not Swiss. Most people walking around are not analysts. So therefore, the Chacham said there's nothing to be concerned with. And therefore, if the 9-year-old boy wants to remain married with the 3-year-old girl, they want to keep them together. Let them keep them together. What's the big deal? Nothing to lose by doing kibbutz. So what's the nekudas and machlekes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? So the Gemara takes Rabbi Meir's sheet and says, aha, this sheet of Rabbi Meir, mikad that Rabbi Meir is chashish lamiyut. Rabbi Meir is the tad who says chashid lamiyuta. That we don't follow rov so fast, we're not so quick to be about the things based on rov. We have to be concerned with the miyut. And the Rabbanan say, lo chashid lamiyut. So this Gemara appears in the Beis of Maseches Gittin. We spoke about this in Kol HaBokur a couple of years ago when we learned Maseches Gittin. It appears in Maseches Yevamos, it appears in Maseches Chul. Throughout Shas, the Gemara always keeps on quoting this machlokes, Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan, whether chashid lamiyuta or lo chashid lamiyuta. But the original machlokes started with this case in Maseches Yevamos. What exactly does that mean, Rabbi Meir is chashish lamiyuta? That means Rabbi Meir denies it in Rove. We spent the whole shiur last week talking about Rove, Rav Mahatas. Does that mean Rabbi Meir doesn't buy into Chiram Mahatas? So there's a machlokes of Rishonim what the answer to that question is. So there was some Rishonim who say that to a certain degree, yes, that Rabbi Meir does not buy into Chiram Mahatas totally. Because this machlokes Rabbi Meir and the Rachamim is in a case of a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. The fact that we know that most boys, most men are not Srisim, most girls are not illnesses, that's not a Ruba de Isa Kaman. We never sat down and count 100 people in shul and see whether they're Srisim or not. That's a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. We see most normal people walking around, having children, they're physically developed, they look normal. So most men are normal, most women are normal. So that's what's called the Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So it could be that that's exactly what Rabbi Meir disagrees with, that we spent a lot of time last week proving that Ruba de Lesa Kaman exists. Because let's not forget, the original case in the Chumash is Ruba de Isa Kaman. The case of Dayanim, the case of Achiram Mahatas, the model of Rove in the Chumash, is a Ruba de Isa Kaman. When I can count all the pieces of the puzzle, and I made a cheshbon, 9 stores kosher, 1 store treif, that's Ruba de Isa Kaman. Rabbi Meir doesn't disagree with that necessarily. Maybe Rabbi Meir only disagrees with the Ruba de Lesa Kaman.
Say that
was the Sheish Meitzah said that. Maybe right. That's according to the Chachamim. Right. But Rabbi Meir maybe also doesn't exist. But according to other Rishonim, it's not true what we just said. Taisus, the first Bechamah says, Chulin writes that he doesn't believe that it's true. He doesn't believe that Rabbi Meir really denies Rove on a love of the Araisa. He thinks that the whole sheet of Rabbi Meir, Hakol Nikol Kol of Chashin Lemiyuta, is only a Chumra Midirabanan. That maybe on a love of the Araisa, Rabbi Meir follows Rove, Achiram Mahatos, Halacha Bashem Sinai, it's a better. Rabbi Meir says, Midirabanan, we're not going to follow the principle of a Rove, at least in Rub Delaysa, come on. So it could be that Chashin Lemiyuta of Rabbi Meir is a little more toned down. We thought that Rabbi Meir is some fundamental din deraisa. He disagrees with everything we said last week. Chashir lemiyuta, there's no rover. He says, relax. Not so. Rabbi Meir didn't say anything so radical. In a perfect world, in the love of deraisa, everybody agrees that rov exists. Isik, all kind of roves exist. The whole machlekes Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan was only on a love of the Rabbanan. But the Menayis slice it, whether you hold the Rabbi Meir follows Rov with the Raisa, Rabbi Meir doesn't follow Rov with the Raisa, Lamaisa was a Das Yochid, Lamaisa, the Pasha's Advarim is that we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir, maybe. The Pasha's Advarim is that we should follow the Chachamim, we should follow, no pun intended, we should follow the Rov, we should follow the majority view, that we're not Chashish Lamiyu, not mid the Raisa, not mid the Rabbanim. That's the Pasha's Advarim. But Aval Bichain, even though we should work with the approach that we're not really Chashish Lamiyu, we're not so concerned with the Miyu, that's why. The Ma'aseh in Hukas Chalitza, we would be okay. We would have no problems with the Katan and the Ketana doing Yibum. The Rishonim point out that even we accept to a certain degree the concept of Chashid and Lemiyut, at least in certain scenarios. The Rishonim in the beginning of Maseches Chulin developed the following Yesod, that there are different types of Emiyut. There's what's called the Mir HaMatzoi and the Mir She'en HaMatzoi. As the names connote, the Mir She'en HaMatzoi means it's really very, very unlikely that there's anything really going wrong. That's the Mir She'en HaMatzoi. Mir HaMatzoi means that it's a nice percentage. How much is a nice percentage? So the post can use the number 10%. There's a Mishkos Yaakov that developed the number 10%. So there's a 10% chance that something may go wrong. So come the Rishon of beginning, Maseches Chulin, and say that even though we don't really follow Rabbi Meir's sheet, we really paskin the lo chashin lemiyut, not with the rice, not with the rabbanim, we're not so concerned with the miyut. But if it's a miyut hamotzoi, if it's a significant amount, then we have to be cheshish for at least lechatchila, because we can't just ignore a miyut hamotzoi. We have to be baidik. We have to be concerned, we have to look after, we have to try to figure out, can we avoid relying on such a rovan? Where did the Rishonim get developed this idea from? There's an idea called the Mira Matzoi. So the Rishonim, the Ramban, and others in the beginning of Mesechus Chulin proved this idea of Mira Matzoi from a basic halacha in terms of treifos. There is a sugya at the beginning of Mesechus Chulin, where the Gemara got into rov in the first place. The Gemara says when you shecht an animal, so you have to check. You have to check the animal for all the treifas. Many people are learning Daf Yomi recently, so they're learning all the treifas. So tachlis, that's what happens in the shechita places. They open up an animal and they start checking from head to toe for holes in the head and holes in the hearts and holes in the stomachs and holes in that. So that's not true. Nobody checks for those things. All the din of avedal treifas means if you shecht it out and you see a problem. So I'm opening up an animal, I'm cutting apart an animal, I see a gavalt that's got a hole in the stomach, then I got a problem. Like a gavalt, I'm taking off the head and I see, oh no, there's a hole in the head. So then I got to start dealing, then I got to start learning the sugyas of avedal treifas. But nobody told me to start looking, to start pashking around, opening up the animal. If whatever I don't see, when I don't see, I'm not mechuyav to look for. Why am I not mechuyav to look for? Why is that true? So the Rishonim said at the beginning of Chulin, because there's a rov. Because rov behemoth in the treifas, and most animals are not treifa. So the odds of them being a problem is very, very unlikely that there's actually a problem. So far, Baruch Hashem, in my life, I was only asked one shayla of treifas. Somebody came, it was a chanan, you were the one, do you remember chanan? Right? He asked me at Kaparis one year, he brings me a chicken with a half-broken wing or something, and he wants to know, nope, Rabbi, what's it in? Is this a treifa or not? So those who remember the sugyas, and it was just tafyomi, it was just, yes, yesterday's daf. By animals, tzobas hagidin by birds. So yes, be a tzobas hagidin shayla, is the wing popping out here, popping out there. So what did I respond to you? I said, we were in Spicha together, we learned your idea together, my guess is as good as your guess. I said, I had no idea. I said, I'd never learned the treifas. I mean, I learned Abel treifas, but I couldn't answer a treifas shalom for anything. So, I didn't know what to tell you. Anyway.
Danny said that anytime there's a crack on either of the extremities, he's mocking not. In other words, if you have a broken leg, arm, wing, whatever,
okay.
He said he doesn't...
Okay, good, okay. So I'm glad you have someone who knew. I don't know the deal. Anyway.
You have a good afternoon.
Okay. Good. Anyway, so we're getting back to the story. So the Rishonim say that we don't check for treifas because they're highly unlikely. So it's only a miyut. However, we do find in the Gemara, the Rishonim write that we find that some things you do have to check. Which things you have to check? You have to check the lungs. What do you have to check the lungs for? The odds that there's going to be a hole in the lungs, the odds that there's going to be a sircha. Sircha means like a lesion or something inside the lungs. So the Gemara says in Chulin that a sircha is a problem. Whenever you have a sircha in the lungs, that's considered to be a treifa. Why is that a treifa? The halacha Moshe Mesinai is that nekuva is a problem. There are eight different halacha Moshe Mesinai's basic categories of treifas. So certain things are broken and certain things are caught and certain things have holes and different scenarios of treifas. So nekuva is one of them. Certain organs that have holes in them are considered to be treifas. So one of them is the lungs. So why if there's a sircha, is that a problem? That's a machlekes of Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that if you have a sircha, if you have this lesion or something in the lungs, so that's a proof you have a hole there. If you look hard enough, you'll find there's a hole underneath it. And other Rishonim say, no, there's no hole now, but it's omer dekach to become a hole. The lung is already has some kind of a diseased lung, is going to become a hole very, very quickly. So called omer linkov kinokov dung, it just made up the klal. But anything that's about to become a hole is also considered to be a hole. So whatever it is, there are problems in the lungs. The Rishonim say, you have to check the lungs. You can't just eat meat. Everybody knows you have to check the lungs of the animal. But you have to check the lungs of the animal. It's not a 51% chance that there's going to be a hole there. Not a 51% chance there's going to be a sircha there. It's highly unlikely there's going to be a sircha there. It doesn't matter. The Rishonim say, says the Ramban, that's already called the Mira Matzoi. The odds that there's going to be a problem in the lung is greater than in the brain and the heart and the stomach, etc. So that miut is enough to cause a problem. That miut is enough to require us to be baidik. So the halacha is you have to be baidik. You have to check for the lungs. Because that's already a mir ha-motzoi. What kind of a din is that? They have to check for lungs because it's a mir ha-motzoi. Is that a din diraisa? Or is that a chumra midiraisa? Is that a din only midirabanan? So there is a tshuva Mishkanes Yaakov, in that same tshuva where he talks about the number 10%, and so Mishkanes Yaakov claims that this may very well be a din diraisa. But there's a din in that Torah that whenever you have a strong possibility of something going wrong, even though it's not a rov, but still you can't just ignore it. You have to be chashish for it. If you're able to, if it's possible to be baidik, then you're mechuyav to be baidik. And that's a din midiraisa. If you can't be baidik, you can't be baidik, then you rely on rov. But kol zman you have the ability to be baidik, then you're mechuyav to be baidik even midiraisa. Where in the world did this come from, midiraisa? Where does it say that? In the Chumash anywhere? So the Mishkanes Yaakov has a raya from a mechilta. The mechilta says on the pasuk in Parshas Bo, "V'shamarta sechukah zois lemo adam yomim yomima." Pasuk about either tefillin or korban pesach. Well, he's not telling what the pasuk's talking about. But the Mechilta says, from here we derive that a person has to check his tefillin once a year. "V'shamarta sechukah zois." You have to be shaim lechukah. You have to check the tefillin yomim yomima. Once a year, you have to check your tefillin. So Mishkas Yaakov says, "Why do you have to check your tefillin once a year?" The odds are there's nothing wrong with them. The odds are they're probably kosher. The rov is that most tefillin are not pasul. So says the Mishkas Yaakov, "No, you see from here that since there's amiyot that they became pasul over the course of the year, there's a sweat and other things amiyot, and it's a amiyot hamotzli. It's a strong percentage that they became pasul. Therefore, you're mechuyav to check even with deraisa." And the Mishkas Yaakov says, "You see from here that this din of bedika, which you have a amiyot hamotzli, is mamish rooted in the din deraisa." So the Mishnah Chochma in Parshas Bo quotes this Mishkas Yaakov and says, "I think it's right for a lot of reasons." That there is no such thing there, so we don't even pass like this Mechilta. It's not what the Mechilta meant, but it's giving a half a dozen reasons why this Mechilta is totally irrelevant to the discussion. We don't even pass like this Mechilta. We pass in Shulchan Aruch, you're not Mechilta to check your tefillin. Mezuzahs you have to check twice every 7 years because they're exposed outside to the elements. But that's where Shlomo Zalman writes that the din of checking mezuzahs, the ikra din, is only in the outside mezuzah. The din of checking twice every 7 years doesn't apply to the mezuzah raining inside. So what's going to happen to the mezuzah? I don't want to put the sofa out of business. But the meaning is people check all the mezuzahs. But the ikra din, you really only have to check the outdoor mezuzah. So the we pask in the tefillin don't have to be checked. Tefillin ain't shichem b'dika elumis. You never have to check tefillin. As long as they were kosher when you bought them, so the mikra din, you can assume they're still kosher. At some point, the poskim say it's a good idea every once in a yovel. And literally a yovel, but every once in a long time, it's a good idea just to check, make sure nothing is worn out over time. But mikra din, they don't really need b'dika. So the whole mechilta doesn't really mean anything for us.
Maybe it's just me, but I thought it was mezuzahs twice every seven and once every
7 years. No, it's no such. It's not some posts can recommend to get them checked every couple of years because of they're afraid things go wrong. And sofer will usually tell you that's not so good for the tefillin to keep on opening them up. So you ask your local sofer how often you should get your tefillin checked. But in terms of a din, there is no din. So it's very hard to build the whole din on the mechilta. The whole mechilta is a shalak halacha. So anyway, the bottom line is most of the postmen, I think, assume that the requirement of doing bedika for a miyot tamotzoi is only a chumah midrabanan. That's what Rashi writes in the beginning of that everybody knows, every person who shechts an animal knows that you don't have to check for all the trephas, but you do have to check for the trephas in the lungs. And says Rashi, and what would happen if Liyutsu you shechted an animal and you can't check the lungs? Why not? The lungs disappeared. Somebody took them away. Now the lungs are missing. So you didn't do this bedika for the miyot hamotzli. So what will happen? Says Rashi, so but you have to meet anyway. Why? Because you're allowed to rely on rov. That means this din, even it's a chumr midrabanan that you have to check for miyot hamotzli. So that means if you're able to, but if for whatever reason it's impossible to check for the Mira Motsui, already the facts are, already the case is over, so then you rely on Rove, you fall back on Rove and finish.
If you compare the tefillin to something like that, if you didn't do it,
right, so you can still wear the tefillin,
even on purpose.
Right, you can still wear the tefillin, it's still kosher. Right, it means you were mafata, you didn't perform the proper bedikah that the Torah requires, right. But yeah, but the tefillin is still kosher. So Rashi writes, after he develops this whole halacha about the checking in the lungs, telling you that you don't have to check for other trephas, you have to check for the lungs, but it's only a chumrah, and it's only if you're able to, and if the lungs are gone, then it's okay, you need to meet anyway. So Rashi got a little bit nervous. He thought people were going to end up saying, oh, what Rashi just said is you don't have to check the lungs anymore. So Rashi writes, v'ein mefarsim in hadavar. He says, don't tell anybody what I just said. If you learn chulin, the first part, so you see the Rashi, okay, you're stuck, you read the Rashi, tell you the pshat. But he says, there's no great mitzvah to tell the whole world what I just said, they don't really have to check the lungs if the lungs aren't here. People shouldn't lead to a zilzal in checking the lungs. So I call part of this din of not relying on rov, when you have a mir hamotzi, this is a real din, this is the ABCs in terms of checking of hilchos treifos, and this din is noig, not only in the realm of hilchos treifos, this is noig in other areas of halacha as well. So this is the famous application of this in terms of b'dikas taloyim. The halacha is that if you have a vegetable, you have fruit, you have something that grows that is exposed to bugs, so there's a chance that the food is infested with bugs, you know how to eat it, you have to make sure to check it, that there are no bugs there. So what are the odds that there are any bugs here? So it depends. Sometimes you have certain kinds of foods that we know are full of bugs. If there's a rove that's full of bugs, more than 50% of this particular food has a bug on it, so then it's also in a Torah to eat that food. Then you don't even have a rove. But what if you have, let's say, I know, for argument's sake, I know heads of lettuce. the last 10 heads of lettuce, so 7 of them were clean. They had absolutely no bugs on them. Well, three have had bugs. So I know there's a 70% chance that the next head of lettuce is not going to have, assuming all the facts are the same, coming from the same place, the same basic conditions. Let's say if I check 10 heads of lettuce that were grown in a greenhouse, and then I check one that comes from Guatemala, not from the greenhouse, so that's those different facts. But assuming that all the facts, it's a controlled experiment, and I know that 70% of these lettuces don't have any bugs in it, so I want to know, Rabbi, am I allowed to eat this lettuce without checking the lettuce? So the answer is, Minat Torah, probably yes, because Minat Torah, you have a row, the odds are, it's a 70% chance that it's okay. So, and even if it'll turn out, there'll be a bug, okay, so I risk it, I lost. There's a chance that when I eat meat, there may be a trace in the stomach also, with a 70% chance that it doesn't. But, Avo Pichein, right? If the odds are such that it's really a 30% chance that there's going to be a bug in this lettuce, that's already a mir hamotzoi. That's already something you can't just ignore. Then, just as an uchas treifas, you would never think of eating meat without having the lungs checked. You know, nobody today would ever dream of eating such meat. So you can't eat the lettuce without having the lettuce checked either, because it's a mir hamotzoi that there may be a bug there. What if it dips beneath the point of mir hamotzoi? What if it's below the point of 10%? So then, even mid rabbanon, you have to check. It's just as you don't have to check for holes in stomachs anymore. You don't have to check for holes in heads, holes in hearts anymore, because there's only a 2% chance. So too, if I've checked the last 100 bags of lettuce and 99 of them didn't have a bug, one head of lettuce, one time had a bug in it, so that's a meal she'ena matzah, a meal she'ena matzah, not even mechuyev l'chetchila. To be building for, I'm allowed to rely just simply on the rope. So that's the basic format in terms of which kinds of foods require bedikah for bugs and which don't. Then, of course, it becomes a lot more problematic. Well, how exactly do you cheshbon out that 10%? I gave an example, the last 10 heads of lettuce. Is that correct? Is that the arbitrary number that I gave? What if it's follows? Maybe it's the last 10 cases of lettuce. Let's say if I bought within the last 10 cases of lettuce that I bought, there was one case that had a bug. There were 100 heads of lettuce in each case. I'm a caterer. I buy hundreds and hundreds of cases of lettuce. And within the last 10 cases that I bought, one case had one bug somewhere. So maybe that's considered already to be a mir hamotzoi. So now I want to serve this next case. I want to start opening up another case and putting it out at a chasana. So maybe that's called a mir hamotzoi already. So maybe you go bust on the cases. Maybe you go bust on the heads. Maybe you go bust on the bites. Maybe out of the last 10 bites that I took of lettuce, the last 10 pieces of lettuce that I had on my fork, I don't see any bugs there. So if there are no bugs out of the last 10 bites that I had of lettuce, I'm allowed to eat the 11th bite without checking. That would be quite a cooler. So you have different opinions in the Gedolei HaPoskim today. How do you mishay? Everyone's working with the same number. The question is, at what point do you say, by animals, so we're pretty comfortable, we view each animal as a separate entity by a lettuce, so what makes a challah a portion? Maybe a portion, the last 10 portions of lettuce. The last big salads, little salads, jumbo salads, which sizes are you using? How do you determine what's considered to be 10%? So that becomes very questionable. That's why we have different opinions in Poskim today. Different Ashkachas work with different numbers to try to figure out at what point do we say we've been yotzei already, we did all the bedikas already, we're not mechuyev to do anymore. And at what point do you say, no, you still have to be going to dig further.
How should we think that it's recorded upstairs? If you would depend on a robe that you're allowed to be the raisa, but so you had the 30%, you don't have to check, but you happen to eat one with bugs. Did you sin, but you're not punished for it? Or it's considered you never sinned?
Pasha is, you did the avera, but it's irrelevant. You did the avera, but you relied on what the Torah said. Let's say when it comes to treifas, I would, I don't know what you get insulted with what I'm saying, but I would say that it's probably impossible that everybody here at one point ate behemoth treifa. Because just look at the numbers. I've been eating meat for the last 40 years. And again, we're not saying that animals don't have holes in their hearts. Animals, some of them do. Some of them do have holes in their stomachs. It's just that we haven't checked for them. So over the course of 40 years of eating meat, the odds are you probably ate one that was a treifa. So what? The Torah says that you're allowed to rely on that.
That's the Mishnah Yagba makes a distinction between our Mosa and our Seder, right?
The Mishnah Chachma makes a distinction. The Mishnah Chachma says, right? The Mishnah Chachma says that's his answer from Tefillin, that to be Yotzei Mitzaseh, you couldn't rely on Rov because the Kaf Shmaya Gaya, it wasn't Tefillin. The Kaf Shmaya Gaya wasn't. Right.
So if that's the case, that each individual animal ate its kosher, but from the plates, which I put the meat on, for sure is what Trey believes, Right.
This is part of the milk issue. This is part of the Rebbe Shech's issue with the milk. That when all the robes add up together, so at some point I get to the point. So the Pashas Advarim is that I'm allowed to pasken in each case separately. That means I'm nim the gemara on today's plate. I put down a piece of meat on today's plate, so I can say, but there is vada charam lahatas, charam lahatas. This plate is kosher. Then tomorrow I eat another piece of meat, so charam lahatas. The plate is kosher also. And I'm allowed to keep on pasken charam lahatas. What happens in the end when the numbers add up? That's Pashas is not my problem. That's the Pashas.
And the same thing with the behemoth. Each one of the trefes is a
miyashen amatzu.
But if you have 18
trefes, so you want to know, halacha l'maaseh, if I take 5,000 animals, can I make myself a meat salad from 5,000 different animals? In the world of statistics, they'll tell you there's a very, very good chance now that one of those animals is trefe. So
you're saying more that
no,
there's
no,
so many in one animal, and you have
to. No. On all the animals, there's a robe that most animals do not have any of the trefes. Haraya, most animals are walking around. You go to the zoo, the animals are pretty healthy. They're walking around. No animals are dropping dead on the spot. If they had holes in the hearts, you could tell me about holes in the hearts. Holes in the hearts, holes in the stomachs, they'd be happy. Most of them probably wouldn't be doing so well. So the odds are, that's what Chazal said, the odds are that any given animal probably doesn't have any of the above.
But the milk issue is a little different, because what happens, I think Pshat's position is that if he said that when you take all the animals, the actual number is between 2 or 3%.
Right.
So it's between 10 and 1, so assuming, I don't know how that works,
right.
But his question is that when you have, so that means you're telling me that there's the 3% of animals trefus, so therefore the milk that I have is more than, you know, it's not part of a shisha.
But also because the milk comes, the problem is that the milk, all the milks are mixed together.
Right,
that's
what I'm saying. So
in the olden days when I had my one cow, there's a 97% chance that's not a trefus, so I can
correct.
Drink the milk. But Bezman is that any given cup of milk that you have is coming from 5 trillion different cows.
Correct.
So
say that's getting back to
that's that, right. So I think that's usually, I think we usually assume that you don't say that.
You're
passing on each one separately.
He says that. It's less than, you have proper shishim,
right.
And that's why he doesn't drink milk.
Right, but
because of the shishim issue as opposed to the rov issue.
No, the problem only starts because of the lump about the rov also. So Chopanim, again, we don't follow Rabbi Meir. We are Choshes L'miyuta, but only in a very, very limited sense, at least L'chatchil on a miyuta, on a miyuta motzu. Is there any situation where the Torah itself actually throws into question rov, where the Torah itself says you can't rely on some of the klal we've been talking about? So here we have a famous sugi that appears at the end of the first Pechak Subis and other places, called a sugi called Kavua, one of the most deep, darkest secrets in Hilchus Rov, or in any other area for that matter, called Kol Kavua Kemechta Mechta Dali. So we quote the famous case as follows. We spoke the two famous cases contrasted to one another. So one was the case we spoke about last week. I'm walking down Cedar Lane. I find a piece of meat on the floor, and I know there are ten stores. None of them selling kosher. One selling trefe. I found a piece of meat on the floor. So that's called the parish Baruba parish. I count up the stores quickly. Nine of them are kosher. One of them is trefe. I'm perfectly permitted minatora, at least I'm allowed to eat the meat because I can assume that it came from the rove. However, what if that's not the case? What if I didn't find the meat on the floor? I was walking down Cedar Lane. I wasn't paying attention. I'm staggering away, thinking through about Seif Maisa Sugis. And my wife told me to go shopping, to go pick up some meat. So I walk into a store, and I buy some meat, and I walk out. And as I'm walking down the street, I realize, you know, by golly, I don't know, which store did I go into? Did I go into the store that's under Ashkacha? Maybe my mistake, I went into the other store that lost its Ashkacha last week. I can't remember. So I go back to the stores, and I start counting. Oh, there are 9 kosher stores, 1 trefe store. Good. Baruch Hashem, I must have gone into the kosher store. 90% chance I went into the kosher store. So comes the Bryce and says, no, that's not true. That you cannot rely on rov. Why? Because you don't have called the parish Muba parish. The Dover HaAsa, or the Dover HaMud, whatever it is, the Dover HaSafek, has not left anywhere. It's not like the first case where I found a piece of meat on the floor. The latest HaSafek is what's called B'mokam HaKviyas. The latest HaSafek, the point of doubt, is not that the meat is sitting on the floor in the middle of the street in the middle of nowhere. The latest HaSafek is in the stores. The latest HaSafek is in a mokam kavua. The Isser is kavua b'mkavua. The Isser is set in its place. The Isser is there. The trefa store is there. The kosher store is here. There are 10 stores. And statistically, 9 out of 10 are selling kosher. But the latest HaSafek is b'mokam b'kvios. That breaks all the rules. Gemara learns this out from Apostle. It's Xer Sakosov. The Orav Lo V'kom. It takes a half an hour to figure out what Xer Sakosov is. But Lamais is Xer Sakosov called Kol Kavua Kemech. And therefore, it's no longer subject to the rule of rov. You have to treat it like a suffix deraisa, and suffix deraisa l'chumras. Everybody chapped topo, what's going on? How does this work? What's the svar? It's billy ploy, but lemais that's the din. Kach nemra halacha v'shtiris adin deraisa. It's a kol kavu kemechza mechza dami. It's considered to be a suffix. So we spoke about, we have touched upon this last year when we introduced the machlekes, the Rambam and the Rashba about sveikus b'deraisa. If you remember back to the first year in the Sheir Shmaitzis, so the Rambam's famous shita was that all sveikus are mutter min haTorah. If you have a suffix whether something is chaz or not, min haTorah you'll not eat it. Sveikus deraisa is only luchum b'derabanan. So the Achronim asking the Rambam, how could there be a din called kol kavu kemechza mechza dami? Good, zol zayin it's kemechza mechza. Mechza mechza is also mutter. So according to the Rash, who says that sveik is a rasa min haTorah, so I understand the Torah is saying, don't rely on rove. We're treating it as a 50-50, and now you have a problem in haTorah. But according to the Rambam, that, so you treat it like 50-50. Big deal. It's still going to be mutter. So the answer is, also we spoke about last year, is that even the Rambam may concede, now, when do we say that sveik is a mutter min haTorah? That's when you don't have what's called ikva yisura. I have no idea, I find a piece of meat somewhere, and it's a 50-50 chance that chazer is it not chazer. So that the Rambam says min haTorah, if you'd ask Moshe Rabbeinu, he'd say you're allowed to eat it. 50-50 suffix is mutter. But what if I have two pieces of meat on the table? One I know is chazer, and one I know is kosher, and now I can't tell which is which. So that's a different kind of a suffix. Now, again, in the world of statistics, in the world of math, it's the same 50%. But in the world of halacha, it's very different. Because in the second case, I know there's isser there. The isser is in front of me, I just don't know which one it is. So that's what's called ikva yisura. When you have an isser in front of you, and you're just not sure where it is, that's a much more serious type of a suffix. And even the Rambam would concede that such a suffix would be a problem on a level of deraisa. That's what the Achronim write. Every kavu is that. Kol kavu kemechza mechza dami means that the Torah bumps out the principle of rov. So there's no rov, so you're back to, you remain with, it's ke'ilu, you have two pieces of meat. It's, we know it's not really, it's really 9-1, but apidin, it's considered to be 1-1. It's a 1-1 ratio, that's a suffix deraisa l'chumra, even according to the Rambam. So Lamai says a din called kavua, no question about it, kavua works. That's a din, it's a din with deraisa, and it causes us problems in terms of sveikus, because it basically kavua undermines the ability to rove to work. There is a machlekes that we've shown him about kavua. The normal case of kavua is that the iser is not only kavua b'mkomo, it's yadua b'mkomo also. It means everybody knows this is a treif store, this is a kosher treif. Everyone knows exactly what's what. That's, and even at the time that I went in, I wasn't paying attention to what was going on, but if I would have woken up for a second, I would have realized that this is also, this says on a big bold letter, not kosher. This is kosher, I just wasn't paying attention. That's the classic case of kavua. But what if it's a little bit more subtle than that? What if at the time when I go to the makom kvius, nobody knows what's going on? Nobody even realized, nobody was samalev that there was any kavua in the first place. So is that also called kavua? So some rishonim say that's not called kavua. So Ran says that kavua means it has to be kavua, which is yadua, shas, latest, the suffix. But if the idea, it only becomes known to anybody that there's a kavua at a later point in history, that's not called kavua. They quote a Gemara in Bava Kama, that Eim Zomer is a chidushu, Mikal Habahu Nifsal, that kavua is a chidush HaTorah. So chidush HaTorah is only chaf at the moment that you're aware that it exists. What you don't know doesn't hurt you, and it's kavua. And if, even though it turns out in Metzias it was kavua, since there was no yediyah of bichlal, that's not called kavua, and therefore you follow Rov and forget about the whole principle of kavua. And the Rashba disagrees, says there's no such klal. Machlokes Rishonim in your day at Simuk Kufiyud, is there a kula nuchas kavua? Can we say that kavua only applies when there's some degree of yediyah l'chala olam? Or do we say kavua works all the time? Why is this machlokes important? This machlokes important. Stavkas is important, but this was part of the Shetel controversy. So a few years ago, when the first issue came out about the Shetel issue, that there was a shayla about what hair was coming from a Vedizar, from the crevice of Vedizar and not. So my initial reaction was, it's machlekes d'Ran d'Rash. But why? I said, what was the problem? The problem was, yet people were going to India to go buy hair for Shetel. So assuming that the Metzias was as follows, assuming these facts are right, most of the hair wasn't necessarily coming from these idol worshippers. Most of it maybe was coming from other sources, assuming that's right. So the question is, can we follow Rove? So here, I'm sitting in Barapwa. I have a Shetel in Barapwa. So I want to know, can I use the Shetel or not? Can I rely on Rove? So the problem is, no, you can't rely on Rove, because that's not Piresh. That's called Kavua. Why? Because somebody walked to India. Somebody flew to India to go pick up hair. So there were 10 places, again, exactly, there were 10 places selling hair. So 9 of them are selling kosher hair, and one of them selling treif hair. So they have a dessert, they have some banu hair. So somebody walked in, the Shetel Macha walked in, or the Shetel Macha's agent walked in to one of these places and bought pair. So that's not called pirish. That's called halach l'macha makavua. The issue is kavua b'mkomo. So we apply the rule of kol kavua k'mechta mechta dami. Once you have kol kavua k'mechta mechta dami, roe falls by the wayside. So tikrovus of edazar zederaisa. That should be a shal of a suffik deraisa l'chumra. So the question becomes, is that really kavua? At the time, nobody knew what was going on. Said, if you would have stopped and asked people 5 years ago that there's avodah zarah here in India, they would have thought you were crazy. No one ever heard of this. I mean, almost nobody. Some people knew about it before, but it wasn't yadua la'olam yet. So according to the Ran, that you don't say kavua, but it's not yadua bichlal. No one's aware it is. If you have 10 stores and none of them are marked treif, so everybody assumes everything is kosher, and now a year later you find out that there's an issa there, so maybe you don't say kavua la'mafreya. That's the Ran's chinish. You don't say kavua la'mafreya. If you don't say kavua la'mafreya, then you say you follow robes. That was my initial reaction. The whole shaila was that even if you want to call it kavua, it still depends on the machlokes around the Rashba. That's what we pass it. So there's a shach and you're there trying to figure out how do we know when you have a shaila of a suffix, a kavua la mafreya. So remember there was a fellow who years ago I had met over the summer somewhere, learned in Lakewood for many years. So every once in a while, he used to call me from Lakewood, talk and learning. So right after this whole crisis broke, so I remember he called me up and he said to me, he said, what's the why you stance on the Sheitel? What are they saying and why you about this? I said, I know what they're saying and why you, I can tell you what I'm saying. I said, I think my initial reaction was, it's the Rashba and the Ran. So he got all excited, we were talking about the Rashba and the Ran over the phone. I don't know, whatever happened, there were 15,000 other factors that went into the Shaila. But I remember having this discussion with him, that I was representing the why you stand. We felt that it was a machlekes the Rashba and the Ran. I don't know who I was speaking on behalf of, but I said it's machlekes the Rashba and the Ran. Whether you say kavua and mafreya now. Now, call upon him. In the case where you do say kavua, so kavua really breaks everything. Kavua is going to ruin the robe. Kavua is going to trump the principle of robe. We're going to put us right back again to the case of the suffix. And it's such a chometik a suffix. It's a suffix that rises to the chumra, even according to the Shittas Rama.